Blog Talk.
I'm sorry for that little gap here. Tonight's reading is a continuation of the essay "Circles," written by Ralph Waldo Emerson. I have that up on my chat room right now, so you may be able to go back to it or join it or talk about it. I'd really enjoy your comments, by the way, regarding this thing. So, why I chose this and why I started to get these passages is very, very few books that I've mentioned this before, but very, very few books that have ever attracted me to the extent that this particular one does. And it's a collection of Emerson's works, select selected essays, lectures, and poems. And it's edited by with a foreword by Robert D. Richardson, Jr., and is put out by Phantom Classics. And I've had this book for years. But I'm thinking, let's see, it's... I believe it was in the 90s. Let's see. 1990. So if anybody's interested, Ralph Waldo Emerson, Selected Essays, Lectures, and Poems, Bantam Classic Book, October 1990. Right? Cover art was by Charles H. Davis, Quiet, and is the name of, is the scene on the front cover. And and the courtesy of Fork Galleries of Bantam Inc. Okay. So that's the picture was by an artist hangs in this gallery. So anyway, that's how old this book is. It goes back 20 years now. So, 21 years. Now, I mean, this thing is dog-eared and breaking up on me. And it's a pocketbook, you know, it's a soft cover. And I have all the collected works in a hardcover, a very old book. Dates back into the 18, I don't know how old it is. It's old. So, one of the of us gives complete works. And one edition. It's a great book. And I've got another book called Emphatically Emerson, which is a unique little book that is from the journals, excerpts or selections from his journals, years of journals. A very, very well-edited book and very nice, very interesting. It's called Emphatically Emerson. And I've got several other books. 365 Days with Emerson is another one, very good. Put out by a friend of mine, Richard Grossman. And he's been on my show several times. I believe I have an interview, several interviews with him, or at least one interview with him from his latest book, Powell and the Emerson and the Tao. A very, very interesting book. So, he's an Emersonian scholar. the thing that I found most revelatory, not revelatory, but the thing that I found with Emerson, there's so much truth to his writing. It hits the core, you know. If you can get past the English, you know, which is 200 years old, you know, you have to kind of work with that a little bit, but and the attitudes and the boundaries that they had, you know, preconceived boundaries. But the thing was is that his vision was an eternal vision. It was something that was linked to an eternity and common man. You know, he was talking to common man, I always called him the secular prophet. I always thought of him as that. There was no question. A man who denounced religion, but believed in God, and that is, you know, coming from a preacher, you know, a trained Calvinist preacher. So I think that from what he saw, he derived most of his genius, if you will, from his appreciation of nature, okay? And by his appreciation of nature, he also understood the nature of man and the nature of God. And he was very much the scientist as well as the theologian, you know? He was just a brilliant, brilliant mind circling the universal orbit, if you will, observing and trying to cast those petals down upon mankind transcendence rather of mankind, the enlightenment of mankind, the uplifting liberal belief system that, and I say liberally, in the sense that it's far open and radical and nonconformist and free, but respecting the dignity of mankind and the freedom of mankind and his soul connection to nature. Right? He felt all answers could be had in nature, observing nature. All the remedies, all the everything that you are is nourished, being nourished by nature. And so, why, if that's the case, why isn't it nourishing your spirit to the point where you can become whatever you were meant to be, you know, whatever you want to be, whatever you want to create. So nature just keeps preserving that. Nature preserves the illusion, if you will, and gives you, but mercifully, it gives you the ground to grow and create your own world, create your own reality. It's like, Mother Nature, when in the spring, when it drops all its pollen and blows, and, you know, all year long, and then plants those seeds everywhere, somewhere, to become the same kind of thing from the same pot, but disseminating the Mother Earth, the sun. Without the sun, the Earth would die. Yeah. So the sun is so important. We receive our energy. We receive our light from the sun. So therefore, the sun should be assimilated with God, you know, with the Creator, with the eye of the Creator, face of the Creator. There's wonderful alchemical prints and artistry that signifies God as the sun, or his face in the sun. It's like we've seen cartoons with the face in the moon, you know, and the sun. Well, the earliest beliefs were that God was the sun and the moon was the mother, and through them we existed, you know, that the day and the night were lit, you know what I mean? So there's day and there's night, there's light and there's dark, and we are a polarized creation. That's what we are. So by understanding our polarity in that way, that everything in the world is of a bipolar nature. We have the yin and the yang. We have the water and air, you know, male and female, just opposites, all right, sharing the same universe, sharing the same reality, though each is unique and individual. In other words, what I'm talking about now, you may be listening or you may not be listening. I'm still talking. So this is my reality. And if you're here and listening to this, then you're sharing my reality. And in that reality, we hope that there will be a mutual understanding and friendship and, you know, respect, okay, that I respect you for listening and you respect me for talking. Are telling you what I'm trying to learn. I enjoy sharing what I'm learning with other people, you know, because otherwise it's rather a lonely journey, you know. But when you share it with somebody, you know, it's less lonely. And when they share it with you, and people are interested in what you're talking about, and you're changing their ways of thinking, or they're changing your ways of thinking. It's a wonderful discourse that I truly enjoy. And I enjoy this on every Thursday night. So let me start with this. The key to every man is his thought. Sturdy and defying though he look, he has a helm which he obeys, which is the idea after which all his facts are classified. He can only be reformed by showing him a new idea which commands his own. The life of a man is a self-evolving circle, which from a ring imperceptibly small rushes on all sides outward to new and larger circles, and that without end. The extent to which this generation of circles wheel without wheel will go depends on the force or truth of the individual soul, for it is the inert effort of each thought, having formed itself into a circular wave of circumference, as for right, to keep itself on the ridge and to solidify and hem in the life. But if the soul is quick and strong, it bursts over the boundary on all sides and expands another orbit on the great deep, which also runs up into a high wave, with attempt again to stop and to bind. But the heart refuses to be imprisoned. In its first and narrowest pulses, it already tends outward. With a vast force, and to immense and into innumerable expansions. Every ultimate fact is only the first of a new series. Every general law, only a particular fact of some more general law presently to disclose itself. There is no outside, no enclosing wall, no circumference to us. The man fishes his story. How good, how final, how it puts a new face on all things. He fills the sky. Lo, on the other side rises also a man and draws a circle around the circle. We had just pronounced the outline of the sphere. Then already is our first speaker not man, but only a first speaker. His only redress is forthwith to draw a circle outside of his antagonist, and do so men do by themselves. The result of today, which haunts the mind and cannot be escaped, will presently be abridged into a word, and the principle that seemed to explain nature will itself be included as one example of a bolder generalization. In the thought of tomorrow, there is a power to upheave all thy creed, all the creeds, all the literatures of the nations, and marshal thee to a heaven which no epic dream has yet depicted. And every man is not so much a workman in the world as he is a suggestion of that he should be. Men walk as prophecies of the next age. Step by step, we scale the mysterious ladder. The steps are actions. The new prospect is power. Every several result is threatened and judged by that which follows. Everyone seems to be contradicted by the new. It is only limited by the new, and a new statement is always hated by the old, and to those dwelling in the old comes like an abyss of skepticism. But the eye soon gets wanted to do. For the eye and it are effects of one cause. Then its innocency and benefit appear, and presently all its energy spent, it pales and dwindles before the revelation of the new hour. Fear not the new generalization. Does the fact look crass and material, threatening to degrade thy theory or spirit? Resist it not. It goes to refine and raise thy theory of matter just as much. And there are no fixtures to men. If we appeal to consciousness, every man supposes himself not to be fully understood, and if there is any truth in him, if he rests at last on the divine soul, I see not how it can be otherwise. The last chamber, the last closet, he must feel, was never opened. And there is always a residuum unknown, unanalyzable. That is, every man believes that he has a greater possibility. Our moods do not believe in each other. Today I am full of thoughts and can write what I please. see no reason why I should not have the same thought, the same power of expression tomorrow. What I write, whilst I write it, seems the most natural thing in the world. But yesterday I saw a dreary vacuity in this direction in which now I see so much, and a month hence I doubt not. I shall wonder who he was that wrote so many continuous pages. Alas for this infirm faith, this will not strenuous. This vast ebb of a vast flow, I am God in nature, I am a weed by the wall. And I so agree with him there. In a continual effort to raise himself above himself, to work a pitch above his last height, betrays itself in a man's relations. We thirst for approbation, yet cannot forgive the approver. The sweet of nature is love, yet if I have a friend, I am tormented by my imperfections. The love of me accuses the other party. If he were high enough to slight me, then could I love him and rise by my affection to new heights? A man's growth is seen in the successive choirs of his friends, and for every friend whom he loses for truth, he gains a better. I thought as I walked in the woods and mused on my friends, why should I play with them this way, this game of idolatry? I know and see too well, when not voluntarily blind, the speedy limits of persons called high and worthy. Rich, noble, and great, they are by the liberality of our speech, but truth is sad. O blessed spirit, whom I forsake for these, they are not thou. And every personal consideration that we allow costs us heavenly state. We sell the thrones of angels for a short and turbulent pleasure. And how often must we learn this lesson and cease to interest us when we find their limitations? The only sin is limitations. It is all over with him. As soon as we once come up with a man's with a man's limitations all over for him. He has talents. He has enterprise. He has the knowledge. It boots not. Infinitely alluring and attractive was he to you yesterday. A great hope, a sea to swim in. Now you have found his shores and found it a pond, and you care not if you never see it again. Each new step we take in thought reconciles 20 seemingly discordant facts as expressed of one law. Aristotle and Plato are reckoned the respective heads of two schools. A wise man will see the Aristotle Platonizes. By going one step farther back in thought, and discordant opinions are reconciled by being seen to be two extremes of one principle. And we can never go so far back as to preclude a still higher vision. Beware when the great God lets loose a thinker on this planet. Then all things that are at risk. It is as when a conflagration is broken out into a great city, and no man knows what is safe or where it will end. These are passages that just floored me when I read them. And they're so powerful. And then I think in their brevity and their conciseness of thought, they're so very effective and very powerful. No question about that. I want to get used to putting a little musical break in between segments. It gives me a chance to shift gears here, and also a chance. relax and listen to something different. I'm going to play this song. And it's called October Night. And it's about 4 minutes long. So, but it's fascinating. It's very good. It's a guitar instrumental, and it really just it scratches at your soul somehow when you hear it. It's got flutes and it's got so many things, and it fascinated me. It's a fascinating song. So I'm going to play that now because I believe this is going to bring us into the next level. What we can talk about tonight, and what I'm going to go into is read one or two more paragraphs to this. We're almost near the end. We only got about two pages left to read to this essay. And what I'd like to do is then possibly jump into the Toltec path a little bit, so we can understand. I want to understand some of the transitions and techniques, and then. And possibly touch on the Merkaba before the night. So it seems like a lot to cover, but we still got half an hour. But I would really like you to listen to this song and feel it. I like it. I enjoy it. Maybe you may not. I don't know. But I like it. And it's called, I know it's called October Night in D minor, or B major, October Night. Right, so October Night in B major. I don't know who wrote it because it's non-copyrighted, but it's excellent. And if you like it, please download it yourself and play it for yourself. Great song. Let me just turn it on now, and I'll be back right after. This is about 4 minutes long. Thank you. something different. We should have different thoughts, different moods. Pardon me as I take a drink of water here. I'm parched. Let me continue where I left off. Beware when the great God lets loose a thinker on this planet. Then all things are at risk. It is as when a conflagration is broken out in a great city, and no man knows what is safe or where it will end. There is not a piece of science, but its flank may be turned tomorrow. There is not any literary reputation, not the so-called eternal names of fame, that may not be revised and condemned. The very hopes of man, the thoughts of his heart, the religion of nations, the manners and morals of mankind are all at the mercy of a new generalization. Generalization is always a new influx of the divinity into the mind, and hence the thrill that attends it. Valor consists in the power of self-recovery, so that a man cannot have his flank turned, cannot be out-generalized, or cannot be out-generaled, put him where you will, he stands. This can only be by the preferring truth to his past apprehension of truth, and his alert acceptance of it from whatever quarter. The intrepid conviction that his laws, his relations to society, his Christianity, his world, may at any time be superseded and decease. There are degrees in idealism. We learn first to play with it academically, at the magnet that was once a toy, and then we see in the heyday of youth and poetry that it may be true, that it is true in gleams and fragments. Then its countenance waxes stern and grand, and we see that it must be true. It now shows itself ethical and practical. We learn that God is, and that he is in me, and that all things are shadows of him. And the idealism of Berkeley is only a crude statement to the idealism of Jesus, and that again is a crude statement of the fact that all nature is the rapid efflux of goodness executing and organizing itself. Much more obviously is history and the state of the world at any one time directly dependent on the intellectual classification then existing in the minds of men. And the things which are dear to men at this hour are so on account of the ideas which they have emerged on their mental horizons, and which cause the present order of things as a tree bears its apples. A new degree of culture would instantly revolutionize the entire system of human pursuits. Conversation is a game of circles. In conversation, we pluck up the termini which bound the common of silence on every side, and the parties are not to be judged by the spirit they partake and even expressed under this Pentecost. Tomorrow they will have receded from this high water mark, and tomorrow you shall find them stooping under the old pack saddles. Yet let us enjoy the club and fame whilst it glows on our walls. And when each new speaker strikes a new light, emancipates us from the oppression of the last speaker to oppress us with the greatness and exclusiveness of his own thought, then yields us to another Redeemer. We seem to recover our rights to become men. Oh, what truths posed in the announcement, what truths profound and executable, only in ages and orbs are supposed in the announcement of every truth. In common hours, society sits cold and statuesque. We all stand waiting empty, knowing possibly that we can be full, surrounded by mighty symbols which are not symbols to us, but pros and trivial toys. Then cometh the God and converts the statues into fiery men, and by a flash of his eye burns up the veil which surrounds all things, and the meaning of the very furniture of cup and saucer or chair and clock and tester is manifest. The facts which bloom so large in the fogs of yesterday, property, climate, breeding, personal property, and the like, have strangely changed their proposition. All that we reckoned settled shakes and rattles and literatures, cities, climates, religions, leave their foundations and dance before our eyes, and yet here again see the swift circumscription. Good as is discourse, silence is better and shames it, and the length of the discourse indicates the distance of thought betwixt the speaker and the hearer. If there were a perfect understanding in any part, no words would be necessary thereon. If at one in all parts, no words would be suffered. Literature is a point outside of our hadronal circle, through which a new one may be described. And this, the use of literature, is to afford us a platform whence we may command a view of our present life, a purchase by which we may move it. We fill ourselves with ancient learning, install ourselves the best we can in Greek and Punic, in Roman houses, only that we may wiselier see French, English, and American houses and modes of living. In like manner, we see literature best from the midst of wild nature, or from the din of affairs, or from a high religion. The field cannot be well seen from within the field. The astronomer must have his diameter of the Earth's orbit as a base to find the parallax of any star. And therefore we value the poet. All the arguments and all the wisdom is not in the encyclopedia or the treatise of metaphysics or the body of divinity, but in the sonnet or the play. In my daily work, I incline to repeat my old steps and do not believe in remedial force and the powers of change and reform. But some Petrarch or Aristo filled with new wine of the imagination writes me an ode or a brisk romance full of daring thought and action. He smites and arouses me with his shrill tones, breaks up my whole chain of habits, and I open my eyes on my own possibilities. And he claps wings to the side of all the solid old lumber of the world, and I am capable once more of choosing a straight path in theory and practice. And we have the same need to command a view of the religion of the world, and we can never see Christianity from the catechism, from the pastures, or from a boat in the pond, from amidst the song of woodbirds we possibly may. Cleansed by the elemental light and wind, steeped in the sea of beautiful forms which the field offers us, we may chance to cast a right glance back upon biography. Christianity is rightly dear to the best of mankind, yet was there never a young philosopher whose breeding had fallen into the Christian church by whom that brave text of Paul's was not specially prized, and that was, then shall also the Son be subject unto him who put all things under him, that God may be all in all. And let the claim in virtue, boy, more than I thought here, but let the claims and the virtues of persons be never so great and welcome. The instinct of man presses eagerly onward to the impersonal and illimitable, and gladly arms itself against the dogmatism of bigots with this generous word out of the book itself. I need to take a second here. One second. Just got a little water. same law of eternal procession ranges all that we call the virtues and extinguishes each in the light of a better. The great man will not be prudent in the popular sense. All his prudence will be so much destruction from his grandeur. But it behooves each to see when he sacrifices prudence to what God he devotes it. If to ease and pleasure, he had better be prudent still. If to a great trust, he can well spare his mule and panniers, who has a winged chariot instead. And Geoffrey draws on his boots to go through the woods, and his feet may be safer from the bite of snakes. Aaron never thinks of such a peril, and many years neither is harmed by such an accident. Yet he seems to me that for every precaution you take against such an evil, you put yourself into the power of the evil. I suppose that the biggest prudence is the lowest prudence. Is this too sudden a rushing from the center of the verge of orbit? Think how many times we shall fall back into pitiful calculations before we take up our rest in the great sentiment, or make the verge of today the new center. Besides, your bravest sentiment is familiar to the humblest men, and the poor and the low have their way of expressing the last facts of philosophy as well as you. Blessed be nothing, and the worse things are, the better things are. Proverbs which express the transcendentalism of common life. And that's the way it is. I don't want to digress. I mean, I hope this enhances the conversation somewhat, the dialogue, but to me, there's an aspect of I don't know. I should probably just keep going. There is no virtue which is final. All are initial. The virtues of society are vices of the saint. The terror of reform is the discovery that we must cast away our virtues, or what we have always esteemed as such, into the same pit that has consumed our grosser vices. Forgive his crimes, forgive his virtues too. Those smaller faults have converts to the right, and it is the highest power of divine moments that they abolish our contritions. Also, I accuse myself of sloth and unprofitable day by day, but when these waves of God flow through me, I no longer reckon lost time. I no longer poorly commute my possible achievement, but what remains to me of the month of the year, of these moments, confer a sort of omnipresence and omnipotence which asks nothing of duration, but sees that the energy of the mind is commensurate with the work to be done without time. And thus, O circular philosopher, I hear some reader exclaim, you have arrived at the fine Pyrrhonism, or at an equivalence and indifferency of all action, and would fain teach us that, if we are true, forsooth our crimes may be lively stones out of which we shall construct the temple of the true God. I am not careful to justify myself. I own I am gladdened by seeing the predominance of the saccharine principle throughout vegetable nature, and not less by beholding the morals that unrestrained inundation of the principle of good on every chink and hole that selfishly has opened. Yea, I have my own head and obey my whims, let me remind the reader that I am only an experimenter and do not set the least value on what I do or the least discredit on what I do not, as if I pretended to settle anything as true or false. I unsettle all things. No facts are to me sacred, none are profane, and I simply experiment, an endless seeker with no past at my back. This is his apology. This is his explanation for muddying up the waters, you know. What if? And I guess that's what I feel, and that's why I so enjoy this man, because every time I read him, it's like a slab of cold water in the face, you know. It's like, wow, you know. Could this feeling, this idea, this how this concept generates this concept, and together it works in a harmonious relationship and of thought that appeases or pleases, I should say, the mind. Because the mind is a very tyrannical being. It, you know, it has its own way, and it needs to be entertained all day long. It needs to be taken care of, you know. So by doing that, by trusting the brain, by respecting the brain, we respect what we put into it and, you know, what it wishes to be. And there are some very pleasurable things and some very not so pleasurable things, and we try to avoid putting things in our memory that we do not want to remember. So I guess we then, if we can do that and do that successfully, then we've actually achieved a level of that level that launches us into the next dimension. Because by departing this one, so much, not in body, but in body and spirit, when all of us, all that we are, ascends into another dimension, that dimension will be one of joy and happiness. There will be no aging. There will be no diseases. There will be no anything like that. No illness, no anything. We'll just be risen to a level of where we can afford to take care of ourselves, and at the same time afford to be to learn and learn more and more and more and more about who we are. And that's why I brought up this essay on circles with Emerson, is because in it, it ties us to eternity. The essay explains how we can understand in a step-by-step motion, just as building bricks or you know, some are shoveling out a station so you can put a fireplace in there or something. But the revelation is when that ignites, when those thoughts ignite and can form that power that drives the esoteric societies, fuels the each and every how can I say it? It fuels the Merkaba, if you will. It fuels us. I'm going to get back. I'm kind of losing my thought here. Yet this incessant movement and progression, which all think partake, could never take be sensible to us, but by our contrast to some principle of fixture or stability in the soul. Whilst the eternal generation of circles proceeds and the eternal generator abides, and that circle, certain life is somewhat superior to creation, superior to knowledge and thought, and contains all its circles. Forever it labors to create a life and a thought as large and excellent as itself, but in vain, for that which is made, it structs Thus there is no sleep, no pause, no preservation, but all things renew, germinate in spring. Why should we import rags and relics into the new hour? Nature abhors the old, and the old age seems the only disease, and all others run into this one, and we call it by many names, fever, intemperance, insanity, stupidity, and crime. They are all forms of old age. They arrest conservatism, appropriations, inertia, not newness, not the way forward. We gristle every day. I see no need of it. Whilst we converse with what is above us, we do not grow old, but grow young. Infancy, youth, receptive, aspiring, with religious eye, looking upward, comes from all sides. But the men and women of 70 assume to know all. They have outlived their hope. They renounced aspiration, accept the actual for the necessary, and talk down to the young. Let them take some organs for the Holy Ghost. Let them be lovers. Let them behold truth. Their eyes are uplifted. Their wrinkles smooth. They are perfumed again with hope and power. This old age ought not to creep on a human mind. The nature of every moment is new. The past is always swallowed with forgotten, and the coming old is sacred. Nothing is secure but life, transitions, the energizing spirit. No one can be bound by oath or covenant to secure it against a higher love, and no truth so sublime, but it may be trivial tomorrow in the light of new thoughts, and people wish to be settled. People wish to be settled only as far as they are unsettled, and there are any hope for them. Or is there any hope for them? Maybe I can get through this last few paragraphs here. But the men and the women of 70 assume to know all. They have outlived their hope. They renounced aspiration, accept the actual for the necessary, and talk down to the young. Let them then become organs of the Holy Ghost. Let them be lovers. Let them behold truth. And their eyes are uplifted and their wrinkles smooth. They are perfumed again with hope and power. And this old age ought not to creep into a human mind. In nature, every moment is new. The past is always swallowed and forgotten. The coming only is sacred. And nothing is secure but life. Transition, the energizing spirit, and no love can be bound by oath or covenant to secure it against a higher love. No truth so sublime, but it shall be trivial to tomorrow in the light of new thoughts. If people wish to be settled only as far as they are unsettled, is there any hope for them? And life is a series of surprises. We do not guess today the mood, the pleasure, the power of tomorrow when we are building up our being. Of lower states, of acts of routine and sense, we can tell somewhat, but the masterpieces of God, the total growths and universal movements of the soul, he hideth, and they are incalculable. I can know that truth is divine and helpful, but how it shall help me, I can have no guess, for so to be is the sole inlet of so to know, and the new position of the advancing man has all the powers of the old, yet has them all new. It carries in its bosom all the energies of the past, yet is itself an exhalation of the morning. I cast away in a new moment all my once hoarded knowledge as vacant and vain. And now, for the first time, seem I to know love and aspire. And the difference between talents and character is adroitness to keep the old and trodden round and the round and the power and courage to make a new road to new and better goals. Characters make an empowering presence, a cheerful, determined hour which fortifies all the companies by making them see that much is possible and excellent that was not thought of. And character dulls the impression of particular events. When we see the conqueror, we do not think much or any one battle or success. We see that we had exaggerated the difficulty. It was easy to him. The great man is not convulsible or tormentable. Events pass over him without any impression. But people say sometimes, see what I have overcome. See how cheerful I am. See how completely I have been triumphed over these black events. And not if they still remind me of the black event. Truest conquest is the causing the calamity to fade and disappear as an early cloud of insignificant results in a history so large and advancing. And I have 26 seconds left here, but before we close. And the one thing which we seek with insatiable desire is to forget ourselves, to surprise out of our prosperity, to lose our sempiternal memory, and to not do something without knowing how or why. In short, to draw a new circle. Nothing great has ever achieved without enthusiasm, and the way of life is wonderful. It is by abandonment. In the great moment of history are the facilities of performance through the strength of ideas as the work of genius and religion. A man, said Oliver Cromwell, never rises so high as when he knows not whither he is going. And dreams and drunkenness, the use of opium and alcohol, are the semblance and counterfeit of this oracular genius, and hence their dangerous attraction for men. For the like reason, they ask the aid of wild passions, as in gaming and war, to ape in some manner these flames and generosities of the heart. And that talks about our polarity. Polarity of man. And with that, I'm going to end the night show. I want to thank you so much for joining me, and hope I didn't lose you there anywhere. But